As we have been looking at in Ecclesiastes, in particular, in chapter 8 and in verse 10, so I saw the wicked buried who had come and gone from the place of the holy. They had come from the funeral on their way to the gravesite. And they were forgotten in the city where they had so done. This is also vanity. In other words, the world, with their wicked, they could be terribly, terribly corrupt. But the system, the very city in which they were wicked in, is they honor them still. And that is a common occurrence. Thus, that is vanity, frustration, verse 11. Because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily. Therefore, the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. The longer you procrastinate in capital punishment or anything, the greater the encouragement to produce and pursue crime. There's no reason. If you, like in some countries where you go today and tomorrow, they chop off your head or your hands. I mean, that's impressive. That's fast. I'm not too eager to get involved with that system. But when nothing is done, then it continues. And you say, well, nothing's going to be done. It doesn't matter. Verse 12. Though a sinner do evil 100 times, and his days be prolonged, yet surely I know that it should be well with them that fear God, which fear before him. So a person can do over and over and over again, wrong and wrong and wrong and more wrong, even 100 times. But in his days last a long time doing it. But those that fear God are going to come out all right. Verse 13. But it shall not be well with the wicked, neither shall he prolong his days, which are as a shadow. So if you were to live 100 years, if you were to live 200 years, what is 200 years of life in the light of forever? You can make a little line, take your ruler, if you would, and cut everything down and draw 200 years, scale it out 200 years, and then put 200 years in the middle of forever. How big does 200 years look? It isn't even a dot. You can't even see it. You can't even find 200 years. You couldn't even find 500 years. So God said, listen, so what? So what? They do it a long time. In the light of what's going to happen. Wow. Hell is a long time, you know. It's forever. Not 50 years, not 20 years in jail. No, it's forever. And forever is forever. And we can't conceive forever. It's an awesome thing. Thus, the end of verse 13, which are as a shadow, because he feareth not before God. He has no sense of God, no fear of God. And thus the length of time of the evil that is done is there, and we have to be very careful. Then, and the world wants to read it wrong. They want to read verse 11, 12, and 13 wrongly. They want to call good, they want to call evil good, and good evil. Bitter, sweet, sweet, bitter. They don't want to look at things as they are. It's very uncomfortable. Reality is horribly disturbing to the heart. And so we avoid reality. We avoid it with great gusto. Thus, with that in mind, let us take a moment and consider why God allows this to be true. Why does God let a sinner live 100 years and do 1,000,000,000 things wrong? Why? Now, with that in mind, Psalm 147. Well, you could do some. I think we'll be more connecting with Psalm 47. Try Psalm 47. 147 is very good. This is Psalm 47, a little more direct in where we are. How does God, why does God let all these things happen? Psalm 47, verse 1. Oh, clap your hands, all ye people. Shout unto God with a voice of triumph. For the Lord Most High is terrible. He is a great king over all the earth. He shall subdue the people under us and the nations under our feet. He shall choose our inheritance for us, the excellency of Jacob, whom he loved, Selah. God is gone up with a shout, the Lord with the sound of a trumpet. Sing praises to God, sing praises unto our King, sing praises. For God is the King of all the earth. Sing ye praises with understanding. God reigneth over the heaven, over the heathen and the heaven. God sitteth upon the throne of his holiness. God in his wonderful, wonderful majesty and sovereignty. So, whose side is God on? Well, keep in mind, he isn't on mankind's side. He isn't on angels' side. He isn't on the side of creation as it is. He's on his own side. God alone is only God. He's the only Savior. He is the only one who has the sovereign in his sovereignty, saving solution. God alone is the originator. He is the owner. He is the creator. It is his redemptive plan to save that. His little ball, the earth, held out in space here that's gone amok. And God is going to retrieve that ball and put it back in focus. Planet Earth. And so in the light of God's providence, to see something ahead, to provide providence in the light of what you see, to make provision, providence. And God's wonderful providence, his timely management, his all-wise arrangement, his all-knowing, all at once, at always, at all times. He knows everything, understands everything, has every single piece. And he exercises all of that in his wonderful, wonderful, in the light of his character, in the light of his conduct. He exercises all of that in his wonderful kindness. And the whole purpose of creation is for God to make creation be the beneficiary of his wonderful person, to make creation be the beneficiary of his wonderful person. That's what it's all about. Now, but, creation hasn't responded well, and therefore, in God's providential management, remember that he is unequaled, he is unrivaled, he is unmatched. There's no one similar, nothing similar. He is unsurpassed. Nothing excels him. He is unexcelled. There's no one superior. No one, not anyone. God's wonderful, wonderful management. Absolutely supreme. The highest of highs. The highest of the highest, higher than the highest he is. In excelsis Deo. There's no, wow, no one like him. Now, having said all that, God must always honor his person. His reason for creation is for his glory and honor. And he must do it because of who he is. So just to remind you, as we seek to do this, Isaiah 48. Isaiah chapter 48. It is very helpful and needful that you and I are very familiar with God's person and character. How does he act? How is he like? Because we are in constant danger, and that's a good word, of misunderstanding. We fail to understand God. And we liken God to how we think, how we feel, how we act, how we promise, how the world does, how our experiences are. And we liken God to that. And you have to get past that. Way past that. And if you never get past that, your reasoning is always faulty. Faulty. Because you're using human analogy, human understanding, to understand deity. And you'll mess up every time. So you have to understand that. You're going to goof if you don't. And you have to stop back when you start trying to figure out, just be still and know that he is what? God. That's what to do. Just stop. Stop. Your mind's bumbling all over the place. Stop. Be still. Cease. And know that he's God. Just start with that. If you don't do that, your mind will just keep doing this. And you'll call it prayer. Prayer. Yeah, I'm praying. You're praying. It's all about you. All about how you think and how you feel and how you want God to be. How you want God to look like. What you want God to do. And you've lost it. You didn't mean to do it. It just happens. It's our nature. Thus, Isaiah chapter 48. Isaiah 48. Oh, picking up. Oh. Picking up, if we can, in verse, verse 11. For mine own sake, even for mine own sake, will I do it? For how should my name be polluted? I will not give my glory unto another. And so God must always honor his name, his character, his conduct. Anything that is out of line with his character or conduct, he cannot let go. It must be handled, must be honored. Chapter 43. Isaiah 43. God cannot do it. So you have to know that. God can never dishonor his character, dishonor his character, his name, his nature. He can't do it. So we're counting on God for that. Isaiah 43, verse 25. I, even I, am he that blotteth out thy transgressions. And the reason that we have forgiveness of sins, the reason Christ died, is for his own sake, for mine own sake, on account of who I am. Mankind sinned. God, that dishonors God's character and purpose. God cannot allow that. The reason God is going to do what he does is for his great name's sake. But we never can say, well, I deserved it, I merited, I needed it. You can't do that. Can't do that. We're just creatures created by God. God's the creator. All creation is expendable. You can get rid of it. Don't need it. Don't need anyone. Absolutely don't need anyone. I want to understand that. I want to understand the marvel of all of this, that God would choose to so create us. And so here, for mine own sake, and will not, verse 25, and will not remember thy sins. And keep that in mind, because we're doing a sort of healthy study tonight and have been even healthier. So hang on to that. All those pieces are essential if you're going to win the war. You'll lose if you don't understand. And people that don't care, don't get it, never have it. And life goes on just like it did last week. Next year, same old thing. And we want to advance past that. We want to get beyond that. So, here in God's wonderful, God always is in his wonderful behavior, does everything for his glory and for his great name's sake. And he must always be right. He can never be wrong. It's impossible for God to lie. It's impossible for God to be wrong. Isaiah 45, if you're still there. Isaiah 45 and verse 19. I have not spoken in secret in a dark place of the earth. I said not unto the seed of Jacob, seek ye me in vain. I, the Lord, speak righteousness. I declare things that are right. I can't do any other. So when we open the book, we understand it's not like any other book. It just isn't. Our mind would tell us it's like another book. Our world would want us to think it's like any other book. But it isn't like any other book at all. Thus, verse 22, look unto me and be saved, all the ends of the earth, for I am God and there is none else. Verse 23, I have sworn by myself, the word has gone out of my mouth in righteousness and shall not return, that unto me every knee shall bow and every tongue shall swear. I must do right, I can only do right, and everything must be made right that is wrong. I'm going to do it in my wonderful, wise management, in my providence. I'm going to let happen a man to do a million things wrong and live 1,000 years. I'm going to let that happen. But I have a reason for it. And don't you get deceived. 1,000 years is but a moment in the light of eternity. So back off. We'll see how advantageous it is to do what you want, when you want, as you want, how you want. It isn't advantageous at all. Bad, bad news. Bad news. Thus, Isaiah 48. Isaiah 48, verse 1. Hear ye this, O house of Jacob, which are called by the name of Israel, and are come forth out of the waters of Judah, which swear by the name of the Lord, and make mention of the God of Israel, but not in truth, nor in righteousness. And that was their problem. They failed to give God credit that God was always right. Human nature, human fallen nature is wrong. But God is never wrong. God is always right. And again, verse chapter 48, verse 18. Oh, that thou hast hearkened unto my commandments, then had thy peace been as a river, and thy righteousness as the waves of the sea. It would have been like that for you. If you would just listen, your peace like a river, your righteousness as the endless waves of the sea. Wow. I would have done that. But you know, you didn't understand. You just didn't understand. Thus, having said that, just to tie it afresh in your mind, over in 1 John chapter 2 again, First Epistle of John, you know, there's all kinds of ways to do this, but here's one of them. And in 1 John chapter 2, verse 1, my little children, these things I write unto you, that you sin not. If any man sin, we have an advocate, a comforter, a defense attorney, if you might, with the Father, Jesus Christ, the righteous one. He's the righteous one. He is the righteous one, verse 2, the propitiation, the full satisfaction. He fully satisfies God for our sins. And not for ours only, but also for the sins of the whole world. That's why you can give the gospel to any human being. And God said any human being, can, even the guy that did sin for 1,000,000,000 times, can get saved. Because I died on the cross to take care of 1,000,000,000 times. I died for every single dumb sin you did. Every thought, word, and deed. And it's piled up high, as so high you couldn't imagine. And I took all of that on my own body on the tree in a moment of time. That's a lot of sin. And to be fully conscious of the wrath of God against that pile. Do you get it? That's sobering, you know. I said, wow. Thus, Jeremiah 33. Jeremiah chapter 33. In Jeremiah chapter 33, pick up in verse 14, Israel's great hope, among other things. Verse 14. Behold, Jeremiah 33:14. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will perform that good thing which I have promised unto the house of Israel, to the house of Judah. In those days, and at that time in those days, will I cause the branch of righteousness to grow up unto David, and he shall execute judgment, the branch, a person, and he shall execute judgment and righteousness in the land. In those days shall Judah be saved, and Jerusalem shall dwell safely. This is the name wherewith she shall be called. What is Jerusalem going to be called? What is Israel going to enjoy? She shall be called the Lord our righteousness. God is the righteous one. And when Israel gets with it, they're going to recognize that the rightness that they needed to have came from God, belongs to God, is always God's, and God in his grace gives it to the believing heart. Abraham was saved, and it was counted to him for righteousness because he believed God was right. And what he said and what he did. And Abraham believed God. That's what you and I should do. Now, having said that, in the light of that, God's wonderful sovereignty. His wonderful sovereignty never functions in such a way that human responsibility is curtailed, cut short. It is never minimized or mitigated, made soft, less severe, never moderated. God's wonderful, wonderful, absolute sovereignty allows human responsibility. God does so. Romans chapter 1. God being exactly wonderfully who he is. Wonderfully. But he allows human responsibility for a sinner to live 100 years and do 1,000,000 things wrong. God allows it. You have to see why. God allows people to be all over the place, religiously, politically, socially, morally, all over the place. And that's our world. Isn't it? That's our world. Now, Romans 1. If I can, in verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against what? Against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, of humans, of mankind, that are holding the truth, the reality of God, the reality of his righteousness, holding the truth in unrighteousness. They are calling evil good and good evil. And once you start playing that game, once you start twisting the words and meaning and values, boy, are you going to be in trouble. Well, it's all right. Isn't too bad. What's wrong with it? Say, what's wrong with what I just said? Why don't you stop doing that? You can't do that. Can't do that. Thus, chapter 2. And remember now they hold the... Well, go over, if you would, to chapter 2, verse 14. 2 and 14. Remember, God allows human responsibility, doesn't cut it short, doesn't minimize it, doesn't mitigate it, doesn't moderate it, make it less severe. Chapter 2, verse 14. For when the Gentiles, which have not the law, do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not the law our law unto themselves. In other words, whether you ever read the Ten Commandments, before Moses came down from the mount with the Ten Commandments, a people didn't have the law. The law was given then, and they were all responsible. Job is responsible, and Abraham, Isaac, Jacob are responsible. They're all responsible. They all know. They know. They're condemned. Their own nature, their own heart tells them. Their own heart, without any Ten Commandments. We know guilt, and we know wrong. Verse 15, which show the work of the law. How do they show it? How do they show that they know the law when they don't have the Ten Commandments, etc.? Which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience, the little scale, you know, inside, making it whether right or wrong, guilty, not guilty. Which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts the meanwhile accusing, or else excusing one another. They're either pointing to somebody else's, somebody's the problem, someone's the problem, you're the problem, you're the problem, you're the problem. Or we're excusing ourselves when we're blamed. No, I have an excuse, excuse, excuse. Now, why would you be busy trying to cover your tracks by accusing somebody else of the problem? Why would you try to excuse yourself from that which is real? Except you know the difference between right and wrong, and you're guilty. That's why you do it. So you don't need the law. People just all over the world, no matter where they live, in the middle of the jungle, they know. Thus, with that. Chapter 3. And you'll notice in verse 18, there is no fear of God before their eyes. They don't have a sense of God. They don't want to. Verse 19, for we know that what things soever the law saith, it saith to them who are under the law. Here's the people that without the law, and they're guilty. Well, the people with the law, like Israel, I'm guilty. It saith to them who are under the law that everyone, law or no law, Ten Commandments or law, the law of Moses or any of it, whether you have anything, that every mouth may be stopped, and that ALL, the world system, all humans may become guilty before God. All guilty. So, God, you allow in your wonderful sovereignty, human responsibility. And you allow it. You give humans a space to exercise their morality, their immorality. And they exercise it. Humans are morally responsible creatures. They expressing a meaning significantly, They choose. They rebel, they obey, they believe, they disbelieve, they defy, they make decisions. Humans are morally responsible. They're responsible. You can right now lift up, you know, any kind of thing. You can touch your forehead if you like or not. You make the decision to do that. You made the decision to touch your forehead. Your hand didn't just say, I wonder what I'll do. I think I'll touch the forehead. The hand doesn't touch your forehead unless you want. You tell it to. You tell your hand to touch this forehead. You make choices. Everyone makes choices. They make them. And God said, everyone, there is no way that his sovereignty bypasses human responsibility. Humans are morally responsible. They are accountable for their actions. And they are, as a human, like God. I am, I ought, and I will. I am a person. I ought, I am morally obligated. And I will, I have the right to choose. So here is God. We want to honor God. and appreciate God, but we have the right not to. We have the right to avoid the whole thing. And thus we try to attribute and get away from accountability. Everyone is accountable. No one is unaccountable. And keep in mind now that you can never use chance, accidents. The unpredictable, we don't know. Accident happened, I didn't mean to do it. No matter what, everyone is accountable to God. So you never can say anything. You never can say, well, that was an accident, they didn't have any choice. Ah, but in their heart, they did have a choice. They did have a choice to acknowledge God, Romans 1, or not. Regardless of chance, accident, the unpredictable happenings. And in the midst of all of that, God makes his choices. God makes choices. Humans make choices. God makes choices based on his perfection. We make choices based on our imperfection. And we make choices. And in the process, humans move. And you can always count on God to make, always be doing right. He can never do wrong. Never say wrong, do wrong, think wrong. He always has to be who he is. And everything he does, has to glorify himself. Whatever he allows or doesn't allow, it must glorify himself. Whatever he does or doesn't do is because of who he is, not because who we are. So whatever God's doing and God allows, always human responsibility. Humans are morally accountable to God. But whatever we do, God is going to be honored and glorified in all that he allows and doesn't allow. So here in his wonderful, eternal, timeless thought, and God doesn't think like we do. And remember that God is there always and forever, all at once. God, I am that I am. There is no process with God. You have to process information. True? God doesn't have to process information. God doesn't reason like we do. We have to reason and put the pieces together and have them all. God doesn't reason like we do. God never adds any information. Oops, a piece of information I was missing. There are no surprises with God. No surprises at all. God absolutely has everything perfectly in order, all at once, always, forever. You understand that? That's a lot, isn't it? Now, are you capable of doing that? God is. You have to think. Everything's all in order at once, perfectly. So there's nothing going to be without all the pieces always there. Though a sinner live 100 years and do a million things wrong, people are morally responsible creatures. They choose to believe or not to believe, to rebel, to defy. But know this, God is not subject, is not controlled by people. He's controlled by his holy and wonderful, perfect character and conduct. God never acts other than God. So people don't pressure God, bribe God, push God in a corner. Never do they do that. Wow. I want to have that in mind. Would you go with me, please, in the light of that? And remember, by the way, in all of this, that God is there doing whatever he pleases. Psalm 150. Remember now, Solomon is looking at all of this from human standpoint, realizing God, but he's looking at it, and apart from God, looking at humanity and looking at equality and fairness and rightness and good and bad, looking at it from a human standpoint, you're never going to come up. You're going to be one frustrated person if you're really sincere. You're going to be frustrated. Without God, you have no answer to this thing. And that's what Solomon is trying to tell us, that wicked man live 100 years and do 1,000,000 things wrong. And God, but he's accountable to God. And eternity, as we shared, is an awful long time. An awful long time, to say the least. Now, having said that, remember now that God has no surprises. There's nothing going to surprise God. A lot of people are writing all kinds of things. Theologians are trying to escape the fact that God is God. And in doing so, they're only complicating the problem for the religious Christian crowd, because they keep rewriting God's person, character, that God couldn't know anything. God doesn't know what to do until it happens. That's a new thing. God doesn't know what to do until it happens, and then he has to come up with a plan. The concept of God, theologically. All papers are being written, seminaries, colleges, read, debated. I told you, just stick to the wonderful, simple words of God. And don't confuse yourself with all the junk that's in your head and that's coming in all the time. Stick to the book, simply and wonderfully. And God said, when everything is all done, I only want you to do one thing. And that is what? Remember? John 6, 29, etc. What can we do to work the works of God? And God said, you only can do one thing, one work, singular. And that is what? Believe me. But how about a little discussion, a debate, some dialogue? I told you, just believe me. The minute you start discussing, debating, and dialoguing, you're getting in, you're into your own theological, mental, academic concept. And God's ways and thoughts are what? Higher than the heavens. So, God said, why don't you just do one thing? We do it. None of you would do that. God said, don't worry, and you what? And you worry. He said, don't do it. Don't do it. It's very unprofitable. Now, how much work can you set? Why don't you just believe it? Don't do it. Why can't you stop worrying? Because we're worriers, right? We're professional worriers. We've worked at worrying, and the older you get, the more professional you get at worrying. And you get very good at worrying. You can worry in an academic way. You can worry in a foolish way. You can worry all kinds of ways, and you don't have to ever call it worry. Because you have new names for things. I'm thinking it through. See? Whatever. Okay. So, Psalm 115, verse 1. Not unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but unto thy name. Thy name give glory. God does everything for his name's sake, for his glory. Unto thy name give glory for thy mercy and for thy truth's sake. All of it belongs to you, God. Wherefore should the heathen, the nations, say, where is now their God? Because they're saying, well, where is God? God, where is God? Verse 3. But our God, what is the believer? The believer who has their head screwed on a little bit. But our God is in the heavens, verse 3. He hath done whatsoever what? It pleases him. You see? Well, but we control him. No, you don't. No one controls him. He isn't subject to anybody. Nobody controls God. Psalm 135. In Psalm 135, picking up in verse 6, whatsoever the Lord pleased, that did he in heaven, that did he in earth, that did he in the seas, and all deep places. God does whatever he pleases. And that's our God. That's our Savior. We're in his presence. Wow. God does what he pleases. We honor him for it, don't you? I do. I honor him. God, I expect you to do whatever is right. Because he always will do what? What is right. God, I expect you to be God. It's your creation. doesn't belong to me. It belongs to you. The church is yours. Uniquely, it's your body. Wow. That puts us in a very, very awesome and wonderful place. And thus, again, whatsoever the Lord pleased, that he does. Now, having said that, God is absolutely in his sovereignty. He allows what he does, always in the light of his character and conduct. And in the process of all of that, he has ownership. His sovereignty includes and assumes he owns everything. What doesn't he own? You thinking? Does he own your house? Let's make it quick. Does he own your body? You own your body, right? My body. And it is, in one sense. You're a tenant on planet Earth, and God gave you a body. You own your body, right? How long do you own your body? How long? It depends, doesn't it? What do you know that is inevitable? You must get rid of what? The body that you own. But I thought you owned it. But you don't own it. You don't own it at all. You don't own anything. You don't own the air. We're at the bottom of the ocean of the air. We live in the bottom of the ocean of the air. But you don't own it. You don't own anything. Not a thing. God owns it all. No matter how you cut the cookie, no matter how you do it, God owns the whole thing. Wow. That helps. It does. Because we get sort of cocky, you know, and get a little up there. We have to back down. Back down. Wow. God in his wonderful sovereignty includes his ownership. His sovereignty includes his ownership, his power, and his authority. Wonderfully, wonderfully so. Would you, go with me, to Isaiah 45. Isaiah 45. So God allows what he does, never other than what he wants. And even though sinner live 100 years, do 1,000 things wrong, he's accountable to God. And, by the way, during those 100 years, that sinner doing 1,000 things wrong can do nothing that interferes with God's glory and his great name's sake. God will stop it every time. Only so much, only so long, only in a way that will bring honor and glory to him. So, Isaiah 45, and in verse 5. Isaiah 45, and in verse 5. I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. I girded thee, though thou hast not known me. That, why have you done this? Here's Cyrus, etc. Why have you done this to this Gentile king? That they may know from the rising of the sun, from the west, all across the world, that there is none beside me. I am the Lord, and there is none else. I form, create the light, and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I am the Lord, I do all these things. I allowed all the evil, trouble, catastrophe, heartache, headache, suffering, sorrow. You could sin, and God could have made it that you didn't have any consequences from sin, couldn't he? Couldn't you sin? There are people, using an illustration that isn't that helpful, perhaps. Just think of a person who has a part of their body where they have no feeling. And you could cut off their arm almost, and I guess, and they wouldn't feel it. They have no sense. And here in God's wonderful kindness, God allowed it. God allows suffering, pain, heartache, guilt. God allowed it all. God said, I have allowed all this to the extent and degree that it honors my name, my character, my conduct, that glorifies me, and it accomplishes my purpose for creating planet Earth in the first place. And everything that accomplishes that purpose, I will let happen. Even the tribulation coming up. I'm going to let it all be. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful God. God, God, you do it. He is forever, always the Lord God forever. Would you, go with me over, if you would, over to Exodus. Exodus chapter 6. Now this will tie into the morning, this thought. Remember now in verse 3, Exodus 6, verse 3. And I appeared unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob by the name of God Almighty. But by my name, Jehovah, Yahweh, was I not known to them. I was not known to them by that name. Now, think of that. I am who I am. I am. And I, that word is used 7,600 times, plus or minus, in the Old Testament. 7,600 plus or minus times. No, you won't find that in the Quran. You won't find anything in the Book of Mormon. You won't find that in Mary Baker Glover Patterson. Five marriages. I forget them all. Sometime it comes out right. Sometime I haven't listened to her for a while. No matter who it is, there's only one book. Thus saith the Lord. God said, I speak. And thus here in verse 3, by my name Jehovah, now remember, it has three little sections to it. He will be, that's the future. He will be being, that's the present. And he was, that's the past. So you have, he will be, being, he was. Future, present, past. That's the word Jehovah. All in one, I am Jehovah. I am the future, past, and present all at once. All at once. That's my name. Thus, skipping down if I can to get the thought, God in great authority speaks. He speaks and makes it very, very clear, very, very simple that God happens to be who he is. And thus, I'm not even going to read that. I think I'm going to skip. There's a whole thing that tells about that. But I'm going to stop right there and go over to one place, over if you would, to 1 Chronicles 29, in the light of time. 1 Chronicles, chapter 29. God in his wonderful person, I am that I am. Three periods of existence all in one word. He is the absolute owner, and everyone is accountable for their actions. And they need to recognize God so that they don't get hung up with whether a person lives 100 years and does 1,000 things wrong and says 1,000,000 things wrong and goes in the wrong direction in the wrong way for the wrong reasons. You always look to God. God may allow whatever he does, and he does do it for his wonderful reasons. 1 Chronicles 29, perking up if I may. Oh, picking up the thought, let's go to verse 11. Thine, O Lord, said David, thine, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory that and the majesty. For all that is in the heaven and in the earth is thine, it belongs to you. You do whatever you please. Thine is the kingdom, O Lord, and thou art exalted as head above all. Both riches and honor come of thee, and thou reignest over all, and in thy hand is power and might, and in thy hand it is to make great and to give strength unto all. Now therefore, our God, we thank thee and praise thy glorious name. God, you are the owner, you are the one, And you must get all the glory and all the honor for what is or isn't, because we know it all must work together for God's good, for your good, for His glory. That's what you know. It's a wonderful thing. I trust you got a little bit. Though a sinner live 100 years, don't get upset. Though politics and socialism and morality and all the countries of the world and all the different stuff and humans, they're resting. You're going to rest in the fact that they're all doing what they do, as you'll pick up in a little bit. They're all doing what they do. But be of good cheer. Be of good cheer. Keep your eye on God. Understand who He is. You're going to get caught up in what's going on. And you're going to lose it. You won't mean to lose it. You'll think it's right and reasonable. But actually, it'll put you way off track. And then think how hard it is to get back on track. You have to eat humble pie. And most people won't eat humble pie. Won't do it. Anyway, thank you.